Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. You know that performance counts, so put your pension in the hands of our experts. Talk to a financial broker about a Zurich pension today.
Drive Time with Katie Hannan and Cullum O'Mungoyne on RTE Radio 1.
Okay, it was a week of big budgets, blocked Metrolink plans and a bold bid to rebrand Dublin Airport. And joining me now to look back on it all is Kevin Doyle, Executive Editor at the Irish Independent, and Olivia Kelly, Dublin Editor at the Irish Times. Now, this week, the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council said that the government was memorably budgeting like there is no tomorrow and that the proportion of windfall revenues being set aside by the Cabinet were falling. Let's take a quick listen to Alan Barrett, economist at ESRI, who was reacting to the news with us earlier this week.
The headline situation says surplus, but if you adjust for the windfall, that could change very, very dramatically. We're in deficit. This is paid by a very small number of companies. You don't need to be a sort of an actuary or anything like that to work out that this is a highly vulnerable and a highly risky strategy. It's not quite all eggs in one basket, but it's certainly a lot of eggs in the one basket. So anything going wrong at all, and we could see that situation reverse very, very dramatically.
Kevin, I mean, it's obviously, it's not the first time the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council has criticised the government's budgeting strategies, but the language was quite sharp this time, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I think it's worth, Katie, remembering where the Irish Fiscal Advisory Council came from. And it was around 2011, 2012, it was set up on the back of the economic crash because at that side, us in, time, us in the media and the politicians were all like, nobody shouted stop. Nobody told us we should have a body that shouts stop. And so every year this week,
this body shouts stop.
IFAC shouts stop and nobody listens. And it's quite funny because over time they have got kind of more savvy at what we do in the newspapers and what you do in a show like this. And they put these really kind of, I was going to say bitchy, am I allowed to say bitchy on a Friday evening on the radio, kind of comments in there like budgeting, like there's no tomorrow. Last year, the phrase they used was, can you remember it? Fiscal gimmickry. It was fiscal gimmickry was the one that made all the front pages of the Times and the Indo last year. And the truth is that the government see that, they react to it. They say it's very important that we have a body like the Fiscal Council, and then they carry on as if they don't exist.
Olivia.
Well, they're clearly talking to the government all the time, but definitely in this, the use of the phrases that they're using now, that's talking to the public. That's really wanting the public to wake up. And in a way, it's very, there's an echo there of the Charlie McCreevy, when I have it, I'll spend it. And maybe people who remember the last crash might get a bit of a chill when they hear a similar sort of phrase coming out and think, oh God, maybe we should wake up to this now.
Is there a sense of that coming up to dangerous times feeling in the air again?
Oh, I think it's there, Katie, but I think there's two worlds that exist out there because, right, you cover lots on this show about the cost of living crisis, and we could talk about that here for the rest of the evening. And then I could say to you, go out this weekend to any shopping centre and you won't find parking. You'll come out of there with a headache because it's so busy and thronged and people with bags everywhere. Go to Dublin Airport any day of the week and it is thronged and there are people everywhere.
Well, the Cabinet itself is very reminiscent, isn't it, of the last days of Rome, the last days before the crash. You know, that's what we were like.
Absolutely. And I think that the government is
were
kind of...
Were you partying then, Kevin?
Was I partying then? I probably was, Katie. Sure, weren't we all? But do you know what's interesting? I had a conversation with a younger colleague this week, who I won't shame, obviously, but they were in their kind of late 20s, I would say. And myself and Fiona Sheehan were chatting in the office about IFAC and all the things with this younger colleague who past remarked that, well, like, the crash wasn't that bad. And our jaws were on the floor. And I realised that actually for anybody who's under kind of maybe 30s, maybe even mid 30s, there is kind of a, I don't really remember just how bad things got that, because now we have a housing crisis, not an economic crisis, a very different thing to what we had back in 2008, which was very much the whole economy was gone, we had no jobs.
We have too many houses, remember?
Yeah, too many houses, and then there was no jobs for anybody. We still have pretty much full employment. And so there probably are a lot of people, I think, Olivia, who actually, while it does feel like the last days of Rome for some of us, actually think, no, this is the good times are here again.
Yeah, Yeah.
Okay, Metrolink then.
Mm.
Because this was the week where we got word that, and I think it was just at the deadline.
It was, yeah.
There was, I suppose, some people hoping against hope that they would pass that deadline for planning objections.
Yes.
But just at the deadline, we were told that the Metrolink was facing an inevitable delay after judicial review proceedings were taken by a group of residents living in Ranelagh in Dublin. Let's just hear what Dr. Paul Davis, a lecturer in procurement in DCU, told us this week.
Depending on the judicial review, if it goes ahead and the full review takes place, best case scenario, a delay is 6 to 9 months. More realistic scenario is 12 to 18 months, and the worst case scenario is 2 to 4 years. What's interesting for us here is that we already have the tender out in the marketplace. So this is going to make people who are actually looking to bid in nervous. They don't have a fixed view as to when they could start. So if I was a supplier, I'd be really worried at this stage.
Okay, so Olivia, you were writing about this week. Just to explain to people, a judicial review is basically a challenge to the planning.
Yeah, you were saying there that it came in at the last minute. That's frequently what happens with judicial reviews. It'll be the very last day that you can possibly submit it to the courts. Yeah, you have to take a judicial review when it's a planning decision on the basis that you feel on Commission Planola, who made the decision, erred in law in some way, in that they made a mistake in law. That's meant to be the way that judicial reviews are taken. And I'd say a lot of people think some of the judicial reviews that have been taken against planning decisions over the years, you know, that maybe haven't reached that particular bar. But I suppose leaving that aside, yes, they're saying that on Commission Planola's decision on the Metrolink, they're questioning the legality of that decision, essentially.
And it's a particular neighbourhood in Ranelagh that has been the worst impacted by the, or you, if we want to put it that way, that will be impacted most dramatically by the new rail line.
Well, I you could say there's a lot of people along the lines. There's other people whose homes are being demolished, so they'd probably argue that they're being the most impacted. Taking a judicial review is an expensive process. A lot of people might like to take it and wouldn't have the money. So if you think about the line, it's running from Swords to the airport, to the city centre, and then out to the Charlemont stop, where there's the current Lewis stop out there. And that's where it'll end. So I think a lot of the reason that people are opposed to it out there is they feel they're being turned into a transport hub, because it's an end of the line stop. And this particular group of residents, they're living on Dartmouth Square West. And so
it's a lovely square, Dartmouth Square West.
It's very, very nice. The City Council, I have to say, have done a lovely job on the square itself. There, it's one side of the square, their back gardens. That's where the final stop of the Metrolink would be, just behind their back gardens. And it's that group of people who are taking the challenge.
I think there was a kind of almost an audible groan when this news came through this week. The minister is saying that it's an inevitable delay, but he's encouraging people to drop the review and consider mediation.
Yeah, they're not going to do that, are they? Once they've lodged it now, it's clear that they don't want it in their back garden. It's as clear
literally.
As that. Literally, yeah. It is literally the definition of NIMBYism. And I think you say there's an audible groan. I think you're right, because it is 20 or so people. There may be others, as Olivia, you say, who are not happy about this but haven't gone the legal route. And then there is the rest of us. There are the people who think that a metro should have been built 10, 20, 30 years ago. And I live on the north side of Dublin. If a metro is ever built, I'm a very short walk from one of the stops. And I know that for the 5, 6, 7 years it's going to be built, that my commute into town is going to be terrible, that my local park is going to be dug up. But you suffer it, because if I had a metro at the end of it, it would be fantastic. So like when I bought my house in 2017, I assumed by now, 2020, 2025, that I might have a metro to get to work.
And instead, I'm
still in my car.
Yeah.
And you know, odds are in 2020 to 35, I'll be still in the car.
What do you think, Olivia? Is there a chance that we're catastrophizing about this latest delay?
There is a chance, yeah, because just because there is a judicial review going on doesn't mean that that procurement process has to stop. So we're not at the point yet where anyone is signing a contract with anyone to start digging a big hole in the ground. The point we're at the moment is Transport Infrastructure Ireland going out to the market and saying, who would like to build this and how much would you charge us to build it? What they do then is they take all that information, they formulate a final business case to go to government and say, here, this is what people are saying it's going to cost. Are you still willing to fund this? And if government says yes, then they actually go out for the official procurement, the official seeking tenders from someone to actually build it. So that's quite a lengthy process and it can go on while the judicial review goes on. And I wouldn't agree that we'd be looking at something longer than 18 months in this. I would say there's going to be a push to get this judicial review heard quite quickly. So I think the more optimistic scenario of a timeline, as in the 6 to 9 months, is possibly realistic here.
Okay, we'll put that for all of you sitting in your cars, listening to us, cursing the traffic, wishing to God we had proper public transport. That's a little bit of an optimistic take on it. A lot of reaction this week then to a bill to officially rename Dublin Airport after former Taoiseach Sean Lamass. This is Malcolm Byrne's bill, which has moved to second stage in the Dáil. Like, have we enough to be worrying about?
Yeah.
Yes. Sadly, I you probably want us to have a good old debate about this, yeah. But I fall on the side of, like, give us a break. We don't, like, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Exactly. I think Malcolm's been here before as well, back when he was a senator, I think, a few years ago.
He's a big fan of Sean Lamass, to be fair.
Fairly.
And I noted, I was sort of looking up because I was thinking, God, Sean Lamass surely wasn't Taoiseach when the airport was opened, and he wasn't. It was De Valera, another Fianna Fáil politician. But the original name of the airport was Collinstown. So perhaps their partners in government could maybe lay claim. I know it's the townland name, but maybe Michael Collins Airport could resurrect the townland name that it was originally
which
called.
Which was Collinstown.
It was Collinstown is the local townland.
But then we'll start the argument. Why does it have to be a politician? Why does it have to be a man? Should it not be a woman in this day and age? Should it not be a sports star? But if it's a sports star, should it not be a musician? And we'll go round and round and no one will ever be happy. And is that wrong with Dublin Airport? Like, we all know where it is and we all know what it's called and we all know how to get there, except for the metro.
I wonder, though, was the Dublin Airport social media team that renamed their account the Tripartite Dublin Airport this week? Did they actually set Malcolm going again?
Well, they may have given him a platform to take off on that. But maybe I have an idea for Malcolm, and I like Malcolm. He actually has some very good bills, even though I think this one is kind of a waste of time if I'm brutal about it. But maybe he should bring forward a bill that the minister who gets the metro to actually finish can have it named after them.
Yes.
And they put that in the contract and we'll seal that off, whatever minister gets it done.
I love it. Okay, we actually, Sinead has sent us in a message about the lots of people affected by stops for the metro, says Sinead. Glasnevin and Phibsborough is getting a station in a very busy, built up and congested area. That's the point you were making, Olivia, as well. The suggestion that the Ranelagh gang are the worst impacted is farcical. Well, I think I meant the worst impacted in Ranelagh. So there is that as well. So, the other question we were talking about this week was, who is a Grinch or who likes to deck the halls with boughs of holly before November is out?
My halls are undecked, I have to say. I was cycling into the studio here and I did see your tree outside and it is lovely. But it's the sort of thing as well that makes me have a sort of momentary panic every time I see it. I kind of think, oh God, I've nothing done. And then I realise, well, it's November. I don't need to have anything done, you know.
What about you, Kevin?
I have an evolving theory on this, which I would have sat very much in the bank. The 20th of December is time enough to be doing that. And then over time, I probably said the 8th of December, which as a culture was the traditional day where you were allowed to mention the word Christmas. But now I have small children and I'm suddenly starting to learn that it mission creep. It starts earlier and you kind of do want to extend that kind of youthful innocence and joy that comes with that. So
but
no,
would they not be sick of it then by the time it comes around?
No, kids never get sick of it. That's what I'm learning
kids
anyway.
Kids are never sick of Christmas, ever, ever, ever. I'm reminded of the COVID times. Do you remember when people decked the halls very early? And I think we kept it up the longest we ever have, like right into, well into deepest January. Yeah. And it was good. It worked. It cheered everyone up, right?
Yeah, well, I have started. So I went for a walk last night out around my estate, just and I figured about 1 in 10 houses had Christmas lights up in the window now.
Wow, that's...
Yeah, but when I bring my little one with me, I touch and go, oh, it's way too early. So that she's learning, oh, it's way too early. So it doesn't start at home. But like, we are probably all, everyone listening is probably days away from that search in the attic, that painful out the back, dragging, banging your head off the roof, because I think it's becoming inescapable now that once the 1st of December hits, it's game on.
Well, it used to be the toy show was another marker, and the toy show seemed to get earlier every year as
it's
well.
It's a week so later this year,
it's
I think.
Bit, yeah, I think it's a very respectable time this year, to be fair.
We used to be always made write our Santy letters the week before the toy show in case we'd see anything on it, and then we'd be changing our minds.
Yes, indeed.
Making hard work for Santa.
Indeed.
Last minute.
Santa needs a bit of a run-in time. The real tree or fake tree?
I'd love a real tree, but my house will only facilitate a fake one.
Oh, fake tree, definitely. And I'm going to claim that it's environmental because I've had my fake tree for 20 years, the exact same plastic tree for 20 years, and it's lovely. And I won't be getting a real tree.
You won't be getting it. Do you not miss the smell of a tree in the house?
Well, I was just thinking there, if you put up a tree now, a real tree, it'd be dead by Christmas.
This is actually, we did have this issue last year, and I wondered, what can you do? Does anyone out there have any tips to keep your tree alive? Because it's no fun.
Isn't there something, and I could be completely wrong, and don't blame me if I kill your tree, but wasn't there something about putting 7-Up in the, the base?
7-Up, flat 7-Up fixes everything, sure. Yeah, do that.
Oh, God. A child's upset stomach, a drooping tree. Okay, and last question. What is your favourite Christmas movie?
Oh, well, for me, as a youngster, I spent a lot of time being told, Kevin, you're such a disease. But I still love Home Alone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Doesn't everyone? Olivia?
Jeez, I probably don't have one, to be honest. I'm going to actually know Willy Wonka and Chocolate Factory. It's
the original, I presume.
Yeah. Oh, the original.
Not the abomination that came afterwards.
Exactly.
Okay. I'm getting a couple of texts in here. Well, we've done that one already. The Fraser Christmas episode is absolutely brilliant. We got the crashes, and I paid €2 for an average turnip in Dungarvan today.
Not even a good one, an average turnip.
Average turnip. And here's where we should not be laughing about the potential for another crash. But a potential for another crash is poor and low wage are leveraged at every point and carry more of the costs, both of good and bad economic situations. This conversation is distressing. We should acknowledge that, of course, for someone who has lived through it all and is still trying to get housed. And that is a good point. We talk about people who don't remember it, but some people are still dealing with the fallout from that. But I think that's it for us today. Many thanks, Kevin and Olivia.
Thank you.
Very enjoyable catch up. And have a happy Christmas.
You too.
Oh, God.